بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على نبيه وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما كثيرا مزيدا إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد, we spoke mostly about spiritual matters throughout this month. We gave a little talk about Spain. And today, inshallah, we'll mention another historic victory that Allah blessed this ummah with in Ramadan. Because this ummah needs to have a bond with its honorable beginning. This is the ummah that won't be a righteous ummah unless it knows about its beginning. It has to have ties to its early generation. There's no good in an ummah that has leaders who taint and twist the glorious history. Those who make it seem like it's a norm that Muslims should always live defeated and surrenderous. That the Muslims are supposed to live always under tyranny and oppression. They are the submissionists to the enemies of Allah, deluded in their deen and lacking in their manhood. The final 10 days of Ramadan commemorate worship, but at the same time, the final 10 days of Ramadan commemorate defeats to some of the worst enemies of Allah. The defeat of the Tatar in Ain Jalut, the battle of Ain Jalut, the battle that put an end to the transgression of an empire that massacred the Muslims for a long time on the 25th day of Ramadan, 658 years after the Hijrah. 658 years after the Hijrah. The Mughals came out of the area of China. Their first leader was Genghis Khan. And just to give you a brief introduction, you'll know what they're about when you know what Genghis Khan, the name of their leader, means. You'll know how arrogant they were. It means the compeller of the universe. It means the king of all kings. It means the strongest of all the strong, depending on the variations in translations. He was a man who loved bloodshed, but at the same time, he had the ability to gather people. He took advantage of the weak ummah. Even though the Islamic ummah back then was nearly half the globe, it went back then from the borders of what, to China, down to Asia, down to Africa, down to Europe, in Spain, in Andalus. Nearly half the globe was for the Muslim. But there was division and problems, stuff that the Prophet ﷺ warned about. It's not about number and it's not about size. It's about being close and near to Allah. There was the Khilafah Abbasiyah. The Abbasiyah Khilafah that was there. But it was a mere name and not a reality. They were busy gaining wealth and making sure that they remain leaders and not caring about the ummah and neglecting the ummah. And that was in Iraq. Then if you move a little bit down to Egypt and Sham and Hijaz and Yemen, it was under the rule of some of the descendants of Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi. But they were nothing like their father. They cared about power. They split the solid nation their father established and united. The nation he took off from to destroy the crusaders in Hattin. The kids and grandkids of Salah ad-Din brought that strong nation into ruins with their divisions and problems and love of leadership. Small kingdoms, each one fighting and quarreling with the other over power, love of power. To make this introduction short so we can get to our talk, it's sufficient to know a paragraph that Ibn al-Athir wrote in his book on the situation back then. The famous historian Ibn Athir in his book Al-Kamil fi al-Tariq, and he's one of the top Islamic historians. When he talks about it, he says, I remained silent about this, in about this dark era, for a long time, for years. I tried to avoid writing about it. I put a leg forward and a leg backward, hesitant to write about this era and what the Muslims went through. I wish my mother never gave birth to me. I wish I died before this. I wish I was forgotten and out of sight. He's in agony. Ibn Athir is in agony. He's melting in agony over atrocities that happened back then. Basically, if you say it was among the biggest massacres this earth has seen, among the biggest massacres this earth has seen since the time of Adam, you'd be probably accurate and not exaggerated. Anything close to it would be what Bukhta Nasr did to Bani Israel back in Bayt al-Maqdis 563 years before Isa alayhi salam. It was a massacre. Ibn Athir goes on to say, a woman from the Tatar would enter a house with men, women and children. She would kill the men, women and children. Not one would even think to defend himself because of the defeatist, surrenderous, enslaved mentality. Not a single person in that area would think to defend themselves. He goes on to say, I was told that in Muragha, a man from the Tatar would enter an area with 100 men, and he'd kill one after another, and not a single one of them would raise his hands or even try to defend himself or his brothers. They got arrogant, similar to Ad. When Ad got arrogant, they said, who's stronger than us? Hud, come here, who's stronger than us? فَأَمَّا عَادٌ فَاسْتَكْبَرُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ بِغَيْرَ الْحَقِّ وَقَالُوا مَنْ أَشَدُّ مِنَّا قُوَّ Ad got arrogant without right. They said, who's mightier than us in strength? We're the strongest. Meaning, we're even stronger than your Lord, Hud. أَوَلَمْ يَرَوْا أَنَّ اللَّهَ الَّذِي خَلَقَهُمْ هُوَ أَشَدُّ مِنْهُمْ قُوَّ وَكَانُوا بِآيَاتِنَا يَجْحَدُونَ Did they forget the one who created them? He's mightier than them in strength and power. فَأَرْسَلْنَا And they denied our ayat. وَكَانُوا بِآيَاتِنَا يَجْحَدُونَ فَأَرْسَلْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ رِيحًا صَرْصَرًا فِي أَيَّامٍ نَحِسَاتٍ لِنُذِيقَهُمْ عَذَابَ الْخِزْيِ فِي الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا What happened? Allah sent furious winds in days of evil omen for them to destroy them. To give them a taste of disgrace and humiliation in this world and what's in the life after is even worse. وَلَعَذَابُ الْآخِرَةِ أَخْزَى وَهُمْ لَا يُنصَرُونَ You want to get arrogant, Ad? It's not a game. You don't get arrogant with Allah and the believers. They want to post up with Allah? You don't post up with Allah. Who's stronger than us? How dare you say a statement like that? Okay, Ad, you want to say you're strong. Here's a little bit of wind. Let's see how strong you are. The wind took those physical giants in the air like toothpicks and dropped them down to their demise and end on their heads. If you were so strong, why don't you defend? It was just a little bit of wind. Namrud, same thing. When he stood up to Ibrahim and got arrogant and said he brings life and death, Allah took him with a little fly. Okay, you guys claim you're all that. Defend yourself from a little fly that's going to enter your brain and bring you to restlessness until your death. Defend yourself. When they said the Titanic was a ship that Allah couldn't sink, Allah sunk it for them. You don't post up with Allah. When they said the army of the Tatar could never be defeated, Allah sent a servant of his to defeat it and destroy it. Qutuz took leadership within 1 year. Our man here is Qutuz, Saif al-Din Qutuz. He took leadership within 1 year. Allah defeated, of his leadership, Allah defeated the Tatar through him. In this blessed month, a small army, nothing compared to their opponents. An army that was literally set up at the spur of the moment. It was set up in deep, dark times, like times of ours today. A time when the ummah was divided. Leaders were more concerned about their thrones more than they were about their ummah. The khilafah was an image with no reality to it. Disputes were all over. From the deep darkness of that night the Muslims were going through, arose a man. A man and a giant named Al-Malik Al-Muzaffar Saif al-Din Qutuz. He took power 657 after the hijrah. The Tatar were at the peak of their transgression. Egypt was at stake where he was a leader. They were on the verge of attacking Egypt. He took leadership to bring honor and victory to this ummah. Within a year, that's why I reiterate the dates. Within a year of taking leadership, he put an end to one of the most dangerous armies the Islamic ummah was facing. The Tatar were known for their ruthlessness and recklessness and thunderbolt victories. They were quick and swift in their battles. Most of it was by terrorizing everyone. Before they reached an area, the news of their terror and what they do and what they would do and what they're going to do scared everyone to defeat. They went by massive armies even if their opponents were nobody. You read in history about them that they entered a town and destroyed it into ruins. There's no longer a town after they entered it. They didn't care about women and kids and elders and oppressed and oppressors and soldiers and civilians. Everyone and everything is the same. They kept no promises and always breached all their covenants. They started invading Muslim lands by Bukhara, by what's today Uzbekistan, the Russia. The Muslims were weak. And they surrendered there. They gave in. And Genghis Khan gave them a promise. If they surrender, he's not going to harm them. Ibn Kathir in the 12th volume of Al-Bidayah wa Nihaya said, after he promised not to kill anyone of the Muslims if they surrendered, he killed from them a number only Allah knows. He apprehended the woman and raped them. This is Ibn Kathir saying. They took the women and raped them in front of their male family members. The massacres of the Tatar went on for over half a century. Muslim lived in massacre after massacre. Everyone's looking. It's not my turf. Who cares? I'm still in power. Some of the Muslim leaders went on to even help them as long as they let them stay in power. The matter really escalated when at 654 after the Hijrah, when the Tatar acquired the lands of the Romans. Their leader, Hulako, the son of the founder, Genghis Khan, took power. And he headed to Baghdad in 656 after the Hijrah. He committed some of the biggest massacres, killing, stealing, ransacking, looting, raping, destroying the Abbasiyya Khilafah. They destroyed or tried to destroy the Islamic civilization. They even killed the Khalifa al-Mu'tasim Billah and his family and his aides. Hulako in Iraq, in less than 12 days, killed over 2 million Muslims in Baghdad. He had extreme hatred for Muslims in the smell of Islam. He was considered among the biggest enemies of Islam ever, and that even got worse through his wife. She used to inspire him because she was a crusader who hated Muslims as well. When he entered Baghdad, he didn't care about the Khilafah. The Khilafah was really like a hollow shell. It was just by name. His intention was to make the Ummah extinct. He wanted to kill every believer on the face of this earth. They got arrogant. They got belligerent. They kept taking Muslim lands, massacring, killing, raping. They passed Baghdad. They went to the Furat. They went down to Halab in Syria. They killed nearly all its people. Then they advanced and headed to Damascus. And then they went down to Nablus and Karak and Bayt al-Maqdis and Gaza. No resistance. No one to stand up for them. Everyone was being a coward, watching and surrendering, watching and surrendering. No one able to stand up to them. No one really wanted to stand up to them. Now they reached their peak of their aggression. Once this happens, doesn't matter, Muslim, non-Muslim, once someone gets the peak of his aggression, we said it many times, whether it's an individual or a nation, once they hit their peak in oppression, the downfall is imminent and right there. Hulako, the leader, sent 40 men with a letter to our king here, Al-Malik al-Muzaffar Qutuz. He was the leader of Egypt. And he sent a letter threatening him. But Qutuz had another idea. He gathered the leaders and decided to kill all 40 of the messengers. They killed all 40 and hung their heads on the gates of Al-Qahira. Why he killed them, there's many explanations to that. We really don't have to have time to get into it. Qutuz, by the will of Allah, was determined to protect the Ummah. He wanted to fight, especially that he knew that the Tatar were heading to Egypt. No way out of it. He either gets killed, him and his people and the Muslims, gets killed like sheep, or they die like men, or they may become victorious. So Al-Malik al-Muzaffar Qutuz began to inspire the leaders to fight. He gathered the fighters from all over. He declared that it's time to fight. He raised the flag of Allah and the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wasallam. He went out of his way to try to unite the neighboring areas, the leaders in Sham. They were on very bad terms, the leader, Muslim leaders next to him. He went on telling them, the Ayyubiyin, the sons of Salah ad-Din Ayyubi, that they're going to invade Egypt in a short time. Let's unite. Let's put our differences behind us. Let's unite for the sake of Allah and fight the Tatar together. The tensions with the Muslim leaders were so bad. And his main worry was a man called An-Nasir Yusuf al-Ayyubi, the Emir of Damascus. He was a descendant of our leader Salah ad-Din al-Ayyubi, a grandson by blood, not by action. This descendant told the Tatar after their victory in Baghdad, when you come down here, I'll help you against Qutuz. I'll help you acquire Egypt. He just wants to stay in power. The descendants of Salah ad-Din destroyed a legacy in a nation their father Salah ad-Din established. They all wanted power. That's all their concern was. They divided a strong nation that their father established amongst each other. An emir and a king and a leader in Damascus and another king and emir and leader. These are little cities. In Halab and another king and leader in Hama and another king and leader in Hams. All chiefs, no Indians. And all seeking power to acquire and inherit it for their kids. Qutuz had bigger goals. It wasn't about us, me, and you in power. It's deeper than that. The honor of the Ummah is at stake. Our women are at stake. Saifuddin Qutuz wanted to defend the Ummah. And Nasir Yusuf ibn Yusuf al-Ayyubi, the Amir of Sham, wanted to defend his throne. Like the leaders of today. People who reclined to this life, a life of luxuries, letting the Ummah get massacred and raped all over. So Qutuz tried everything to let the past go behind and try to convince them to unite and face off this enemy that's coming to kill us. Qutuz was most worried about this man, Nasir Yusuf al-Ayyubi, the Amir of Damascus next to him, nearby him, because he feared, which was really going to happen if he stayed in power, that he's going to betray him and join with the enemies against him once the war began. To show you how noble Qutuz was, how one man can make a determining difference in this ummah, Qutuz, the leader of Egypt, knew that the neighboring man, Al-Nasir, Yusuf al-Ayyubi, loved leadership. So Qutuz wrote him and sent him a messenger. He said, you can have Egypt. I'm the leader of Egypt. You can have it. You can have my land. Take my land. Just let me be a rep. I'll be under your control. It'll be under your control. Let's just join together against this common enemy. Amazing stuff. You could never imagine leaders doing that. Today you couldn't get a leader of an Islamic society, a little markaz, a little masjid, to step down. It's someone who no one even knows or cares about. But Qutuz wasn't about leadership. It was about protecting the ummah, the honor of the ummah, the woman of the ummah, the blood of the ummah. And Nasir Yusuf al-Ayyubi was arrogant. He refused that offer. The days went on, and he was an obstacle. He was an obstacle to Qutuz, Saifuddin Qutuz, because once the Tatar came, he was going to join him. But when you put your reliance on Allah, and you're determined, and you put your faith on Allah, Allah will find you a way out. A short time after this, after the offer of Qutuz, the Tatar come to Halab in Damascus and oust Al-Nasir Yusuf al-Ayyubi, and he flees like a coward with his soldiers to Palestine, and from there he's forced to join the army of Qutuz. That didn't last long. He was a total failure. So he split away from Qutuz while most of his soldiers wanted to remain with Saifuddin Qutuz. And then soon after that, he was killed by some Tatar soldiers. Now Allah got rid of this man. And not only that, but he got his soldiers behind them. Let's stop here. I guess the time is up and we'll continue with this inshallah tomorrow. We'll take off from this point tomorrow inshallah. Jazakumullah khair. وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم